This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're no longer broadcasting live. I mean, we are broadcasting live, but no longer live and from a windowless bunker. So I guess I can turn off my bunker effect. This is the Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Diana? Is it working? Can you feel it?
I totally feel it. Whoa.
That's my new intro,
man. I
have a new intro.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. So I call people up on Skype who are named Diana, just like 10 or 20 a night. And I call them up on Skype and I go, what are you wearing, Diana? What are you wearing? My wife was sitting at the computer that I connect to you on Skype with. And I said, it's time for me to do the show. Would you please call Diana on Skype? And she, instead of entering it into searching my contacts on Skype, she was searching in the Skype directory and like 100 Dianas came up. And she said, how do you know all these Dianas? And I said, I just call them up when you're asleep. And one after one, I go, Diana, what are you wearing? And then I hang up. No, I don't do that. No, that would be ridiculous and probably illegal in Dubai. You're in Dubai. How weird is that? You're doing radio in America over the interwebs to actual radio from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, which most people haven't even heard of. There's a whole world out there, people. Tell me about Dubai.
It really is. So far, the experience has been pretty amazing. I am staying in a fabulous hotel that actually has a bidet in the bathroom.
I don't know if you could say that on radio, but we did. That sounds so very bidet? French. So very French. Yeah.
Well, it is France. But apparently, I don't know. I've been to other bathrooms overseas, but I think this is the first.
I just go into different bathrooms and say, "What are you wearing?
What are you wearing?" No, I think this is actually the first time I've seen a real, actual live bidet that was separate from the toilet.
Yeah, that's how you know it's a. That's how you know because there's two. There's two things that look like a toilet, but one of them looks like a drinking fountain for where the sun don't shine.
Exactly.
I love making you laugh. It's fun. Yeah. It's easy though.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really easy. I don't know. Is that good or bad?
You're easy.
I'm so easy.
Yeah.
I do laugh easily. I absolutely do. But I have, you know, I enjoy life and I'm kind of still in shock that I'm in the Middle East.
What's a good blonde Catholic girl like you doing in a place in the Middle East that's run under Sharia law that most Americans have never heard of? How did that come to be?
My boyfriend is here on business, and I just came out here to visit him.
Is he an arm salesman?
No, actually. No, we'll talk about that later.
We got to be careful. Just kidding. We don't want you to end up in like the palace dungeon there or anything for free speech. So.
No. From what I understand, though, it is run by a Sharia law, but it seems that most people that you see around here are not really from here.
Well, it's like the Las Vegas of the Middle East. It's the it's where all the sheiks go to spend boatloads of money, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. It's everything is over the top, extravagant, just, you know, wealth pouring out of every pore of Dubai. It looks like the buildings are incredible. I was actually talking to my boyfriend yesterday about it and how every building is just like a piece of art and they're all new and how the buildings in the US, it seems, you know, in most cities that the only ones that are of interest at all are the ones that are really old. The new ones are just kind of bland.
Well,
you know,
the tallest building in the world is in the city of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates where you are right now. Can you see it out your window? Are you in it? Are you in Burj Khalifa?
I don't think very many people are in it. No, actually, it turns out that as of 2012, it was occupied up to 80%, I think, something like that. But initially, they weren't able to rent out very many spaces. And I think that's kind of the same with the Freedom Tower right now. Like, no one is in it.
Well, in the movie Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, there's actually like a hand-to-hand fight that happens on like the outdoors, like window washing equipment of that building, I remember.
Yeah. It's you can't even because there's not any other building that comes close to being as tall as it is. There's just not a, there's no scale. So it just kind of looks, it doesn't look real. Yeah. And by the way, it's called the Burj Khalifa and it's beautiful. I mean, the whole place is just shiny and pretty and sparkly and beautiful and clean. And there's palm trees and it's warm.
Do me a favor there. Back off your mic about an inch. This is a teaching hospital. So we try to like do that stuff live and make it obvious instead of trying to hide it. So go on. Tell me about the Burj Khalifa. I like the name. Khalifa's, I think that's the name of Davy Barker's cat.
Khalifa.
Wiz Khalifa, named after a rapper. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Wiz Khalifa. Yeah. The only thing fabulous that I've done is I went to I think it was a Lebanese restaurant. Well, it was a Lebanese restaurant. We had Lebanese food and it was absolutely incredibly delicious. There's a Lebanese restaurant I like to go to at home and, it doesn't come close. Like I thought it was the best that I'd had. And this is absolutely, it was amazing. And there were course after course after course, and I could not eat all the food. It seemed so decadent. And there was a belly dancer. That was awesome. And I actually ended up being pulled up on stage to dance some sort of, I think, Palestinian, Jordanian dance with five other Middle Eastern men.
Is that legal there?
I don't know. And it occurred to me that this might be one of those situations where you would say what happens in Dubai stays in Dubai. But before I came here, I actually did some research on, you know, what should a woman wear in the area. And it said, you know, basically just use common sense, you know, be modest, you know, don't show all your stuff. And I've been doing that. I've been actually very compliant with that, but lots of women do not.
You don't have to cover your head there, do you? Do you have to cover your head there?
No. No, I do think that the people who are from here, the Emiratis, the people who are, you know, citizens of the of UAE, do have to dress traditionally. So the men are, you know, they wear these long white robes and white head coverings, and the women wear all black and black head coverings. And they don't. I've seen a few women whose faces are covered. I haven't seen any full burqas, but I've definitely seen lots of, you know, actually covering all of the hair and as much skin as possible.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. And I haven't heard very much English spoken here, except for when people from different countries are trying to communicate with each other.
Yeah. English.
And then they use English.
English is the third most common language in the world after Mandarin Chinese, Spanish, and then English. And then Hindu is number four and Arabic is number five. But English is by far the most common second language in the world. Most of the world, in a city, in most of the world, people speak a little bit of English, enough to do commerce and, you know, tell you where the bathroom is or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and it does seem the most of the people that I've communicated with here in terms of people at the mall. Oh, by the way, the mall. I got to tell you about the mall. But most of the people that I've communicated with here that English is not their first language are not terribly good at English, at least the ones that I've come across. And so it is a little bit of an interesting way of, you know, trying to, you know, get points across and ask questions and that type of thing and have them understand you and me actually understand what they're saying back to me, even though it's in English. It's pretty broken English, but still, it's awesome.
You know, how good is your Arabic, you know? give them a...
I learned how to say I love you in Arabic last night, but I've already forgotten it.
That's an interesting thing to learn when you're out dancing with your man from other men.
Actually, I learned it from somebody I wasn't dancing with.
It's so bizarre that you're there and you sound pretty good. I mean, you literally sound better than a show I did last night with someone in rural Maine. You know, I mean, he had a wonky internet connection and this definitely sounds better. Yeah, man, Dubai. I didn't know Dubai existed until about 10 years ago. And, you know, I think I actually first learned about it when I was learning about the islands they were building there. Have you seen the artificial islands that they built?
I haven't actually seen the artificial islands yet, but I hope to. I'm only going to be here for a couple more days, so
it's pretty. It's a pretty bizarre phenomenon. It's I saw a show on it on one of those, like, you know, massive structure engineering, you know, how things are made kind of shows, and it is pretty bizarre. I mean, they've like basically built islands that not far from the shore that, when viewed from the air, like form a map of, I don't know, I think it's the world or Europe or
the world,
the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's the world.
It's the world.
And then there's another group of them that form a palm tree. And it's like, wow, somebody actually got the money together to do that and then did it. It's one of the richest countries in the world, isn't it, from oil?
I think so. It must be. I mean, when you look around, I don't think there's any other Middle Eastern Dubai is one of the Emirates, but I don't think there's any other country in the world that has this kind of extravagance in such a small area and such a small population, relatively small population. Yeah. There's only 2 million permanent residents here in Dubai.
Are a lot of people poor there, or is it more, I mean, I don't want to use the word redistribution of wealth, but I know that in a lot of the Middle East, in a lot of the oil producing countries, you know, most people are way poorer than poor people in America. And then there's just a few people who are, you know, swimming in swimming pools filled with gold.
Yeah, the rich people, all the rich people work for the government, and
of course they do.
There's definitely some poor here. I have not seen the poor yet. I plan on going to the area where the souks are, like the spice and gold markets and everything. And so I think that there's probably, I don't know that they're necessarily so poor that they can't take care of themselves and their families. But I think there probably is a huge dichotomy. I mean, considering all the people I saw walking around yesterday with Louis Vuitton and Burberry bags at the mall, I'm going, how does anybody afford this?
Is that like Middle Eastern Euro trash, or is it people that live there?
It looked like, I mean, there were quite a few people that looked like they probably live here, or at least from the Emirates somewhere, that were carrying these bags. And I was just blown away.
Yeah, it's a constitutional monarchy. It's one of the few countries that still is run by a king and a prince. All right, we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends for more Surfing Around the World with Diana.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Meow. This is the Freedom Fiends talk radio musical extravaganza. Talking to Diana Kyler, one of our regular co-hosts, who is in Dubai, which is a city in the United Arab Emirates, which is a vastly wealthy country run by a king in the Middle East. So tell me more about it. I'm intrigued. Oh, I do want to pause and say Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. But I just say that once an hour if we're not talking about politics. So. Of America.
The obligatory statement.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah statement. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So it's so far it's been really fun. The people seem very, very nice. I haven't really spoken with natives, but you know, the people that are just like me and they're not from here are I've interacted with them, and it's fun. It's beautiful. It's pretty to look at. I'm probably going to end up going to the beach at some point today. The beaches, from what I understand, are, and I really am very excited to see this. The beaches, from what I understand, you just see a mix of all different styles of attire. from bikinis to full, basically what is Muslim swimwear, that's made out of swimsuit material, but it covers everything. So, you know, you're from your head to your feet. And so, that should be very interesting.
And if there's any conservatives listening who are like, this is horrible, they're talking about the Middle East like it's fun. You know, I got to say, Dubai, homosexuality is punishable by law. I mean, by death under law in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates. So, If you don't think homosexuality should be legal, move to Dubai, because it's a it's a conservative paradise in that sense of the word.
Yeah. it just seems really kind of like laid back to me. I don't know. It just doesn't. I mean, obviously, I've only been here 2 days, so I have a bad habit of thinking that I know a city and I automatically want to move there because it's so cool.
No.
You know, because I'm on holiday and I'm having a good time. But, you know, I'm sure that there is a darker underbelly that I'm not aware of.
I also wonder how long you could get away with living there and doing a radio show in America where you're criticizing all the governments of the world like we do, not just the American government.
That's true. They would probably be totally okay with me criticizing the American government, but hey, all governments are not good.
Yeah. And yeah, I know that criticizing the religion is punishable by some pretty serious punishments there, but mm-hmm. I don't know what punishing the all government, you know, not that government specifically, but all governments, that would probably mm-hmm. Raise some hackles and rustle some jimmies if you were doing it over a period of time and living there as an expat. It doesn't seem like a libertarian paradise. It doesn't seem like a libertarian paradise to me. I don't think there will be a free state Dubai or free state United Arab Emirates project anytime soon. Although we do get... Yeah. We do get internet traffic from there from time to time. I notice it in my in the stats, and I always wonder if it's is it the prince, you know, who is it, or is it like Americans listening, or do people there, are they just fascinated that people have such critical free speech, you know, critical of the government free speech in America, that they tune in to listen to it just for entertainment's sake or inspiration.
Hmm. Wow, I did not know that.
Yep.
So let's see.
The Human Rights Watch described human rights in Dubai as less than humane. The treatment of foreign workers was a subject of a disputed 2009 documentary, Slaves in Dubai. The Dubai mm-hmm. government has denied any kind of labor injustices and has stated that the watchdog group's accusations were misguided. Toward the end of March 2006, let's see, blah, 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 blah. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That had to do with the building of the Burj Khalifa.
Ah, and that's a topic. Yeah. Yeah. To tease that a little bit, then we're going to go to the free market here in America, and then we'll come back and tell me more. So tell me really quick about, what's up with that big tall building?
Yeah, it was built primarily, and this is from Wikipedia. It was built primarily by workers from South Asia and East Asia. And when I said it was the rich people work for the government, what Wikipedia says is that this is generally, they came from South Asia and East Asia, generally because the current generation of UAE locals prefer government jobs and consider private sector jobs to be below them.
Of course they do. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Meow, meow.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah. So we're talking to Diana Kyler, one of our regular co-hosts who's usually in North Carolina, but for some reason has magically clicked her heels and transported herself in actuality, literally, to Dubai, the Las Vegas of the Middle East, where sheiks and princes and oil tycoons go to party and go to party somewhere that it's illegal to drink. Let's see. It's illegal to drink. It is illegal to drink there, right?
I see a lot of drinking. I mean, there are most places don't serve alcohol, put it that way. You know, it seems that mostly only hotels serve alcohol. Any other kind of bars outside of a resort or a hotel only serve mocktails.
Here we go. It's it's legal, but is not legal to sell to Muslims. It can only be sold to non-Muslims. It's also illegal there for a Muslim and non-Muslim to marry. Yeah, man, it sounds like a kind of a conservative, you know, if people think that things that don't have a victim should be regulated by law, I think right. Dubai's the place to go, man. I think there, I think it would be if you want a conservative paradise, move to the United Arab Emirates. Yeah.
If we're not conservative enough for you, move to Dubai.
Yeah. Although there's far more conservative places in the Middle East, because it's kind of, you know, if it was one of the more conservative places, it wouldn't be where people would go to party, because party and conservative don't really fit.
Yeah. They're apparently okay for people to come here and spend their money and be decadent and hedonistic to a degree, but their own citizens aren't able to participate in those things by law. So
let's see. The New York Times described Dubai as the kind of city where you might run into Michael Jordan at the Buddha bar and then stumble across Naomi Campbell celebrating her birthday with a multi-day bash. Have you run into either of those people there?
No, but I'll tell you what, kind of going back to the mall again, I was blown away by it's huge. And I didn't even cover half of it. And there were stores there that I know just from reading, you know, like fashion magazines and that type of thing that only I hear about celebrities. Oh, so-and-so is wearing Versace, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, there's a Versace store there. There's Prada. There's Fendi. There's Burberry. There's, like, as I said, Louis Vuitton. There's just like all these places.
Well, there
that
you
it
go.
Seems sort
capitalism.
Of.
Capitalism, man.
Capitalism. Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
Heavily regulated capitalism.
Heavily regulated capitalism. But it blows my mind. I don't know how people can afford that. You know, it's just I went to Express. I bought something from Express at the Dubai Mall.
Well, back to the skyscraper.
I felt
there,
really
the,
poor.
The tallest building in the world. The what's it called?
The Burj Khalifa.
Yeah, you know what Khalifa means? It means caliphate. Which I'm not going to try to define. And I will say that we would have to get our resident Eastern religions correspondent Will Coley on here to really answer that, because. Whatever Glenn Beck says a caliphate is mostly wrong. So don't believe him. it doesn't mean people who want to throw you in a cage and make you, face their direction to worship God. It means something else, but, that's what that building's name means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I coined a phrase, Dean's Law of Building Dynamics, which is the amount of freedom in a region is inversely proportionate to the height of the tallest building in that region. So by that rule, I guess, let's see, Dubai would be the least free place in the world. And Thermopolis, Wyoming would probably be the most free place in the world, because I don't think there's anything over two stories there that I can remember, except maybe the Dinosaur Museum.
Huh.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, though, is that there are a lot of cities in the U.S. where the buildings cannot be built taller than the capital building. In the capital cities, they can't be built taller than the capital building. So I don't know. sound very free.
there's some town in Texas that thumbed their nose at the federal government at some point by I think at some point there was a law in Texas that nothing could be higher than the Capitol building in D.C. and some city in Texas violated it and, you know, made their building 2 feet higher and then flew the Texas flag over the American flag or something. It's something like that. I don't remember the exact things, but Texans are kind of like more nationalistic about Texas than they are about America. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that stuff is tribalism, and I don't dig tribalism. I dig individuality. And I think that people should only be judged by and proud of their individual achievements, and nobody should be proud of the achievements of others just because you live in the same geographic region. And I think nobody should be condemned for living in the same GPS coordinate grid as somebody else that somebody doesn't like, you know. And that's speaking truth right there to how a lot of Americans are like, the Middle East, we should bomb that back to the Stone Age and let God sort them out. You know, I've heard Americans say that the Middle East should be nuked. And they're forgetting the fact also that Israel is in the Middle East, and most of them are very pro-Israel when they say that. But people who say that kind of things don't really have much of a grasp on reality anyway. And people who speak in tribal senses of, you know, you should condemn a group of people because of other mm-hmm. people in that group of people, even no matter how loosely associated those people are just by geography. It's ridiculous. Right. The same thing with like being proud to be an American. Like, I don't even know what that means. I know a lot of Americans I'm very proud of, but I know people from other countries I'm very proud of. And I know mm-hmm. an inordinate number of Americans that are knuckleheads and right. do not instill any pride in me.
Yeah, I'd say the average citizen of any other country, we have more in common with them than we have with our leadership.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Absolutely. And that includes the Middle East.
Yeah. And the same thing with like, yeah. you know, racism. I mean, I've heard the theory from this guy, Jim Goad, who wrote this book called The Redneck Manifesto, which is he almost gets it. He's almost a libertarian. But, you know, he says in there that racism is something invented by rich people to keep poor blacks and whites from killing them. And I kind of think it's true. There's nothing wrong with being, you know, wealthy and making your own money and capitalism, if it's true capitalism without the government involved. But the people who are the ultra rich are generally in bed with a government in some sense, in some way, have some mm-hmm. monopoly, or, you know, the government picking in winners and losers. And the other thing he said was that, and this makes a lot of sense to me with, you know, random differences in people of like, you know, a poor black worker and a poor white worker working on the same assembly line have far more in common with each other than the poor white worker has with the white owner of the factory.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I look at I look at race as insignificant as the color of my mm-hmm. cats. You know, we have a brown cat and we have a white cat. And like, yeah, that's about what I think of colors of skin, man.
Right. Me too.
It's all just
amen.
Yeah. like differences, perceived differences, even like perceived differences within races of, you know, I'm different because I'm this. It's mm-hmm. just stuff made up to keep people from achieving what they can really achieve and keep them dependent on people who want to keep the other people down for them. That's what I say.
Yeah. You know, and if you feel like that, if there's a part of you in your heart that thinks that you are, you know, inherently different from someone else because of skin color or ethnicity of any, you know, of any sort, you know, just, you know, try talking to someone who is, you know, quote unquote, different from you in that respect. And you'll find that you really do have so much more in common than you thought you did. And I've realized, I mean, not that I ever felt like I didn't have anything in common, but, you know, just from being fortunate enough to travel around and meet different people, and you know, it's really a beautiful thing, and it's so eye opening and soul, you know, warming to be able to do that. You know, I just love it, and people for the most part are pretty cool. And, yeah. And there, you know, people, anytime you meet someone that is a jerk, it's generally because they're scared, you know, they're fearful of something, you know, and, you know, just try having some compassion. Yeah.
Some of that stuff, when we say that, some of it kind of sounds like what they teach in kindergarten, but, not everything that's taught in kindergarten is incorrect. And, you know, the basic rules of what should be taught in kindergarten, you know, don't hit other people, don't judge other people. Are really things to live by, but there's a lot of other stuff that's put in there too. Like, I really feel like if you you can't eat candy unless you bring enough for the whole class. I mean, that's a lesson in socialism right there. And I reject socialism. I reject an authority figure redistributing my wealth, you know, whether it's a teacher or the president or the head of the UN. Or my or my quote unquote governor or my quote unquote city council. And they all do it. And like you said, you know, the people that work for the government tend to be better off than the people who don't, because government is a racket. And, you know, I've really been looking at rackets lately, whether they're religious leaders or political leaders or even like libertarian rock stars that people worship, when libertarianism is supposed to be about not worshiping and not having great men and, you know, looking at evidence when it's presented rather than saying I've made my mind up about this person already. And the thing that really all like rackets have in common is the people heading them are all charismatic in one way or another,
yeah.
Which isn't to say that all charismatic people run rackets. I mean, I'm kind of a charismatic person, or, you know, have been really in the past. I kind of don't even care anymore. So, and I don't like to go out anymore. I've had enough mingling in crowds by age 50 I'm happy just doing it a couple times a year now. But yeah, man, it's all vote for me and I'll set you free. It's all, I have all the answers. And I'm seeing this in Liberty more and more too, is like people that say, I have all this new knowledge, and it's the same knowledge. It's, every libertarian podcast ever boils down to the government is bad, cops are worse, the non-aggression principle is good, and don't steal my stuff. That's pretty much every word out of every libertarian's mouth boils down to that stuff. And it's okay that people repackage an old story in a new shiny liner, but just don't make the person your god and think that they're unquestionable and have the answer to everything, and you can't look at anything that's bad about them. The same thing, whether it's a libertarian superstar or whether it's a religious leader or whether it's a politician. And of course the politicians are all immoral anyway, which kind of goes along with that, because I'm not saying anything different than's ever been said by any other libertarian. But it's nice to hear it told by different people in an interesting way, especially if they have cool stories about learning what you can drink and what you can wear in Dubai from a first person perspective.
I wonder how much of that is instinctual,
I don't know
that there's something deep inside of us that's looking for someone, a charismatic leader of some sort.
It's kind of scary. And I think we should talk about that when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Freedom Fiends, that charismatic weekend and late night show on your radio. So I'm talking with Ms. Diana Kyler, who's flying in her vocals over the inner tubes from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. And we got off on a tangent, and we like tangents here. We are all tangents all the time on the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
And we're talking about charisma. I mean, I think charisma is probably some sort of evolutionary imperative for people to be attracted to other people. There's love at first sight. There's somebody for everybody, but there's also people that seem to kind of rise above the crowd for their whole life as kind of a tall poppy, and tall poppies often get cut down as they say in Australia, but you don't have to be good looking to be charismatic, but it helps. And, but someone who's average looking and really charismatic, people are more attracted to them than someone who's stunning looking and vapid and not charismatic. But I will say there's a thing, like movie producers call it it. There's a thing, some people have it. And what
it girl.
Is. Yeah. Well, what it is, it's almost supernatural. And I don't want to use spooky terms on that literally, because I'm kind of being figurative, but it's basically a thing that the camera loves you, where like literally if you're being filmed or videoed and you're talking and even just kind of like not reading lines and not giving a great performance and just kind of being yourself even, but especially if you're an actor and you're doing, lines, or a politician and you're doing lines because they're actors. It just grabs you. Like there's some people that when they start out being actors, they have a bit part in some tiny movie. And literally, like, some producer sees him, they're like, that's the person I want to have a bigger part in my movie. And they kind of get, people don't really get discovered at the soda shop anymore. They generally get discovered kind of like that. Like, they do any kind of film work they can, any kind of bit part, one line, background, whatever.
Right.
And if they're really good, if they have it, they will end up getting more work, especially if they're a talented actor. And you can have it without being a talented actor. And you can be an okay, pretty good actor without having it. I would say, what's the guy from The Matrix?
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, he does not.
Who I was thinking about.
He does not have it, but he's good looking, and what I've heard is he's really, really good at memorizing text, and that's one of the reasons he became an in-demand actor. Like, he just was able to just give producers what they wanted in a couple takes or one take, And, you know, people like that. It's a good thing. So the
I was actually going to say, I thought that maybe he has it because he's not that great of an actor.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never met him. I've met Robert Downey Jr. And he's awesome. He is both a stunning actor and he really has it, man. Like, you know, I met him when I was working on a documentary film, Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow. He did the narration for it. And I met him in the recording studio and spent about an hour hanging out with him. And
that's a great film, by the way.
Thanks, man. And he is, he is charming and very real and really has like something beyond charisma that's almost a glow. You know, it's it. He has it. Mm-hmm. Like, and he had a cold. He had a cold or a flu the day he was there too. And like, you know, was not 100% and was like kind of doing the narration as a favor for a friend of mine who was involved with the movie. And it was like, it didn't matter, man. He had it. He was him on a bad day with a flu is more charismatic than, you know, most politicians. And it's also also real. And he's funny and he's a nice guy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That comes across, too. He doesn't seem like he would be, you know, a jerk or anything in real life. You know, he seems like somebody that would be, you know, cool to have a beer with.
Well, he doesn't drink. If he had a beer.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, he's been arrested a bunch of times to the point where, you know, he went before the same judge 3 or 4 times. And the judge said, you know, next time you come before me, you're going to jail. I don't care who you are. And he went to jail. He spent like 5 months in L.A. County jail as a movie star and like was in general population, didn't get any special treatment, you know.
That experience has to change you.
You know, he actually did an interview where someone asked him what his politics were. And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. And they said, are you a Democrat or a Republican? And he said, I'm neither. And they're like, how'd that happen? And he's like, after I went to jail. And he, you know, they're like, well, what are you? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm pretty sure that means he's probably a libertarian, but doesn't want to say it because in Hollywood, that's not the best thing to say you are. You're supposed to be a liberal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to toe that party line.
Yep. Yeah, man. Charisma can be used for good or for evil. I think, you know, I think he uses it for good. And I think a lot of politicians use it for evil. And
I agree.
Yeah, it's a pretty striking thing. Well, we're going to take another trip to the market here. And we'll be back after hour 2 on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Worms.
Worms. Going on a desert safari tomorrow.
Yeah. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon. High atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. My name is Michael W. Dean. I'm talking to Diana Kyler, and she is, for some reason, in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, in the Middle East. But we got off a tangent off of that in the first hour, talking about charisma and how it can be a double-edged sword, and it's something to notice and be aware of, if not be careful of, or, you know, if you're not going to be evil, you can use your own charisma to further your place in the world. So, Diana, tell me about charisma.
It comes from the Greek charisma, which means favor freely given or gift of grace, but that's actually derived from charis or charis, which means grace.
So basically it's Greek for you have an easy life because you're special.
Something like that.
People buy you grace, drinks.
Yeah, but grace can also be used, like, you know, in terms of graciousness. You know, you're a gracious person, and I don't necessarily think that a gracious person has charisma. So there's something more to charisma than just having grace or favor.
Yeah,
you know, but I do think that there it is something that certain people have, and you mentioned supernatural, but I also think that in human beings and maybe even in the animal kingdom that that there are, you know, you've got your alphas, right? You've got your, you know, in the animal kingdom, you have, you know, your alpha male, and the pack follows that alpha male. In the human kingdom, you know, we have these leaders that have to have, that tend to have some sort of charisma. And I think that there's probably something instinctual in human beings. We have, you know, we've talked a little bit about herd mentality. I think that it's an instinct that we kind of have to fight a lot because, you know, you were talking about, you know, we as libertarians, we're very individualistic. And, you know, we want, you know, we follow our own, you know, paths basically, as long as it does no harm to anyone else. But I do think that there's this human tendency to look to a leader, to look to somebody like, you know, say, I don't know, a certain person with the initials SM, you know, to guide us. And, you know, I that's something that I really feel like we have to fight that, you know, we have to avoid falling into the trap of following a leader because that's what got us in trouble in the first place.
Yeah. That's why libertarianism, you know? Needed to be invented because of people mm-hmm. following leaders blindly. Yeah. And, I'm something else. I'm not an alpha or a beta. I don't know. Let's call it a theta. It's an alpha that wants to be left alone.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I just think we have to fight that. And, you know, a lot of other things, a lot of other instinctual behaviors we have to fight. So let's fight that too. You know, let's just, you know, stay conscious, you know, and these instincts tend to come up, I think, when we fall asleep. And I know for myself that I've been asleep, you know, for a lot of my life. You know, I kind of vaguely knew that there was something wrong, but couldn't pinpoint it. And it wasn't until I took the red pill of libertarianism that I realized what exactly it was.
I don't like that term. You can use it if you want, but I'm not going to use it, yeah. Especially since there's a couple of problems I have with the term the red pill for libertarianism. One is that term is also used for the men's rights movement, which is kind of a reaction against feminism, which is it can be just as creepy and bombastic as extreme feminism. You know, mm-hmm. There are some cogent points in both groups, but, you know, a lot of it ends up people who've been really harmed by particular women lashing out at all women. And the same thing with some, you know, extreme feminists can end up being, you know, women who've been harmed by a man or a small group of men in their life who take it out on all men. And like I said, man, I think there's differences between the sexes and they are wonderful, but mm-hmm. yeah, I don't think they're different species and I don't think they have different instinctive qualities that make one better or worse. And I've always felt really comfortable around women and never really had a problem with them. I mean, I've dated some crazy ladies in my time, but I was not, you know, the most emotionally mature person at the time either. And I don't have any vendetta against women because of that. I don't even have a vendetta against any of those women, even a few that like stalked me kind of in a pushy way, not in a scary way, but like, you know, when we broke up, they just wouldn't take no for an answer and kept calling me even after I said, "You're really bugging me. You're bugging my new girlfriend. You're bugging my new wife. Stop calling me," you know, but, you know,
see, that's what charisma will get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll get you stalkers.
Maybe. Yeah. I used to be, I guess I'm still charismatic, but I've always, in my whole life, there've always been people attracted to my thoughts and words and things that came out of my head and wanted to know more. You know, I have it. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of just hidden it under a basket for the past 10 years because I don't care and I don't want people following me around like a puppy. I like it when people like the things I say and the, you know, media I make and tell me it's good or buy it or donate because of it. But I'm not dependent on that for my worldview and my stuff can hold mm-hmm. up to criticism. The only criticism I've ever heard from anybody, you know, in Liberty who has anything to say about me, I'm kind of beyond reproach personally, and I'm kind of beyond reproach for my message. The only thing they ever throw at me, you know, when I say to them, "Hey, you're giving Liberty a bad name because you're telling people to go shoot cops and you won't do it yourself." Not that they should, but you know, like people that's the thing I notice about people that say, "We need to have a revolution." They never have one. They just hope someone more unstable than them will have it for them. But, you know, when I point out the
Facebook revolutionaries,
Facebook revolutionaries, and, you know, when I bayonet polishers and, you know, a lot of them can't even shoot a pistol well, let alone a rifle. But, you know, when I point out to them that that's a failing tactic, you know, they scream at me and all they can come up with is like, you're dumb and you're on government radio and you have to not cuss. And I get to cuss on my little podcast. So, you know, the only thing people could ever say to me is say I'm boring. And there are apparently tens of thousands of people who think I'm not.
I can't imagine anybody thinking you're boring. I really can't.
I've had a few named libertarians that I've criticized for things a lot more serious and real than being boring, you know, in public for what they do. And all they come back with is you're boring and you're on FCC radio where you can't cuss. I can cuss on the internet. You know what being on FCC radio means? It means that somebody thinks you're good enough that they're willing to pay money to have you out there. Whereas a podcast, I like podcasting, but podcasting means you think you're good enough to spend, you know, $100 a year on a hosting account. Being on radio means somebody thinks you're good enough to pay, you know, a board op, a wage to be there to board up your show and to pay satellite fees to have you on radio. And that costs more per week than doing a podcast costs per year. So, maybe I'm boring, but somebody thinks I'm not and is willing to put their own money into it out of their pocket. People who are actually running a business and making money rather than people that are, you know, begging for nickels and dimes on the internet. Yeah. So charisma, man.
So there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, charisma. It kind of seems to me like there's a lot of fields where somebody with a little bit of charisma can wrap themselves in the flag of the field, the chosen field, and inherit the charisma. Like an example would be, you know, a lot of politicians and preachers and musicians and libertarian speakers are very charismatic, but then there are ones who are not, who people still pay attention to, you know, because they're wrapping themselves in the charisma of God. If they're a preacher, like the church,
right?
They just are the mouthpiece for the church. And people say, yes, I must come to you because I can't speak directly to God. I have to go through this guy or this woman. You know, and the same thing with politicians, like some politicians like George Bush and but Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama are, you know, extremely charismatic people and good public speakers, even if they say and ah a lot and sound really folksy. And both Obama isn't folksy. He didn't grow up in a folksy place. He was kind of studied Reagan. He doesn't have the delivery, like the tonalisms of Reagan, but he kind of has the delivery, the halting, like searching for words. And, you know, Obama on paper and Reagan on paper should not be good public speakers, but they were because they were extremely charismatic and kind of played up their folksiness, whether they had it or not. And that's a trick. That's an actor. And Reagan was an actor. Reagan was a Democrat who, you know, joined the Republican Party when John Wayne asked him to, because, you know, they needed someone to read the script, basically, and deliver it. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting, you know, talking about Obama being folksy and everything, and he didn't really grow up that way. So he adopted it.
No, man. You know, he grew up in Chicago and went to good colleges and, you know, kind of, you know, he grew up kind of poor, but then like people saw his potential as a community leader and started, you know, paying his way and stuff.
Yeah. You know, what kind of kills me, though, is that when people talk about leaders like Obama and even Bush, you know, that, oh, yeah, they're stupid. They blah, blah, blah. It's like you cannot be a stupid person and get to that point in your life.
I think Bush Jr., Bush W., might be the exception. His dad was extraordinarily intelligent. He was the head of the CIA. Mm-hmm. No matter how much you hate the CIA, and I do hate the CIA, you cannot be of average IQ and be the head of the CIA. I mean, those are like, you know, they don't call it intelligence for nothing. It is people who like use every trick and trade craft, and, you know, sneaky backdoor, smart rocket science-y kind of method, to spy on people. And, you know, the guy heading that has to be pretty smart. Bush Sr. was pretty smart. There's a really good, biopic about George Bush that came out a while back. I don't remember the name of it. It might just be called Bush, but it's pretty well researched, and it kind of basically portrays him as a good-natured, folksy, down-homey, not very smart frat boy who basically was riding on his rich dad, daddy's coattails, you know, didn't have to go to Vietnam, spent the Vietnam War, you know, in, I think it was North Carolina, in, you know, in the National Guard, polishing bayonets and getting drunk, and, you know, got into an Ivy League school, barely made it through it, you know, owned a football team because his daddy gave it to him, messed that up, almost ruined that. And finally, like, you know, his dad bought him the presidency, basically. And really, it was Cheney. Dick Cheney was the evil genius behind the throne.
Right.
All right, we'll be back after this trip to the market. But yeah, Obama's smart. He's evil, but he's smart. Reagan was kind of smart, but he's evil. Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Freedom Fiends. So we spoke to our crack research team. They went out for some crack and then they came back and did some research for us and told us that the name of the film I was talking about was not Bush. It was W, and it stars Josh Brolin as George Bush. And it's directed by Oliver Stone. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, this is, well, it's made by liberal Hollywood. Of course, it paints George Bush in an incorrect light. But Oliver Stone is kind of considered a conservative by a lot of Hollywood and kind of looked down because he, he backed Ron Paul at one point. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. So, I thought he was super lib.
So tell me a little bit more about the movie from what the cracked research team handed you during the break.
Let's see. It looks like that he had been trying to follow in his father's footsteps to a degree. Like initially he said he didn't want to be in politics. You know, he felt he was being sort of forced into the whole political arena. But I think the competitive spirit got to him and he really started, you know, pushing for things. And he, at one point he ran for Congress in Texas and lost to another Republican candidate.
He lost because he wasn't Texan enough. That's how it's portrayed in the movie.
He wasn't Texan or Christian enough.
Yeah, because
and then he
decided to become as Texan and Christian as he could be.
Yeah, and he because he's got that Texas accent.
Well, the Bush family lived in several different states, and I think one of them was Connecticut, which is about as un-Texas as you can be.
Right. I don't think he was born in Texas, but I do think he lived a great deal of his life, and he was in the Texas National Guard. And he also, it was the Texas Rangers baseball team that he ran and didn't do very well with that.
George W. Bush was born in New Haven, Connecticut, and he attended Yale and Harvard and didn't do very well in either college. He got in because, because of family connections and legacy stuff. So, yeah.
So, I was under the impression that he actually did very well. And when he went to Harvard and the Harvard Business School, that he did very well. That's what my understanding.
Because he was charismatic. He pulled, charisma makes up for a lack of intelligence with teachers, apparently. Yeah.
So he became governor of Texas, and according to the biopic, and also according to history. The Wikipedia article doesn't do a lot to kind of portray Bush. I mean, it does kind of portray him as sort of a frat boy partier and doesn't really take life too seriously. But it looks like, you know, again, that he just kind of got caught up in that whole, you know, bid for power kind of thing and became a lot more serious. But yeah, you know, having Rumsfeld and Cheney, you know, sort of guiding all of your footsteps.
His family and his wife's family, Laura Welsh, You know, they are all born with silver spoons in their mouth. I mean, Laura Welch, before she was Laura Bush, in 1963, ran a stop sign and hit another car and killed the driver in the car and, you know, didn't even get arrested for it.
Yeah.
That's something that's true that not a lot of people know, that the Bush family did a pretty good job of covering up. But yeah, that happened.
Yeah. I think that came out though in one of, it was either his first presidential bid or a second one that had happened. And I seem to recall her being on some news program and being questioned about it. And she is very contrite and, yeah, so it eventually came out, but I keep getting in my mind, I'm imagining.
You have to be contrite when you're pinned down like that. You can't be like,
exactly.
You know, you can't fold your, tense your fingers and go, excellent, I'll run over as many motorists as I like, you know, like Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns, I'll tell you what, every time I see Dick Cheney, that is exactly who I think about as Mr. Burns. He's got that same look.
Yeah.
It's like, I think evil people end up with that look.
I can't say that. I'm in Wyoming and he probably has like a button on his BlackBerry to drone me. So I'm kidding. I kid. Of course I kid. All right. So go on.
It reminds me, and thinking about Laura Bush, you know, having to be contrite and do the whole thing, you know, answer questions to this incident, you know, because nobody kind of put that out there as this having happened. It makes me think of Claire from House of Cards.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Laura Bush is anywhere near as brilliant as Claire, but you know, it. Yeah, it's just politicians. It just kind of gives me the creeps to think about it.
Yeah, me too, man. It's a weird planet we've landed on here, us people.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Charismatic talk radio. Put your hands on the radio and feel the healing power of the Freedom Fiends. You do that so much better than me. You do it in our promo, which you actually said on a show one time. Go ahead and do it.
Feel the spirit of the fiends just coming right through you through the radio.
Yeah, I think it's easier to do if you were born in Florida and live in North Carolina, even if you're in Dubai, whereas I was born in upstate New York and live in Wyoming.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because here I don't have a Southern accent. I just have an American accent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true.
But yeah, it was, speaking of the Southern accent, I actually had someone mention one of the ads that I've been on, and he said, were you asked to turn off your Southern accent? Because I just love your Southern accent. He said, I love to listen to that as much as I like to listen to Morticia Adams speak French. And I'm like, no, I didn't turn it off. I mean, it just, I don't know.
Comes and goes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Comes and goes, like Marilyn Monroe's charisma.
Now, you think she had it, but I don't think she had it. I think she was kind of like a weird little puppy that was dragged along and put into situations that she didn't really understand.
I think there's different types of charisma. Her charisma, I think, was a vulnerability that people were very attracted to. You know, I think that, you know, there's... you know, she had the vulnerability. You know, some people have like, you know, a strength that comes across as charisma, but Marilyn Monroe was more vulnerable. And, you know, according to this I'm reading, she was able to turn her charisma off and on. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but
she was a robot. You know. No. You know, she also was, considered to be kind of the ultimate girl next door. You know, she was pretty, but she wasn't stunningly gorgeous. And people kind of liked that. I think men kind of liked that because it seemed less threatening than someone that was stunningly gorgeous. I don't know. She had such a tragic, messed up Hollywood career, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty obvious that she, you know, needed that, that attention, that kind of constant like reassurance that she was okay. And she probably thrived on the love that she, or the perceived love that she got from her audience and her fans and everything. And, you know, I don't know. It's like, I'm not saying that I, you know, I'm connected with her in any way, shape or form, but I can kind of understand that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, needing that outward acceptance in order to be okay with yourself. And I think she had that in spades. And I think it ultimately destroyed her, of course. So,
well, maybe she was killed by the CIA. I mean, she was doing the president.
Yeah. Well, so they say.
Yeah. there's a lot of evidence for that. She was having relations with John F. Kennedy, with Jack Kennedy. Yeah. But
I do think she was made too. I think that she kind of had the basic form, you know, and so somebody came along and said, you know, you've got this structure that we can build upon. And so that's what happened. And so I'm looking at a picture of her right now when she was Norma Jean. And you're right. She looked quite different as Marilyn Monroe than she does, than she did as Norma Jean. And, you know, with the platinum blonde hair. And I think she had a nose job.
Maybe. I mean, there are people that are not made too, that are like fully formed and then just get, you know, picked up by the industry that is the pipeline to commerce. Like a really good example is Nirvana. I saw Nirvana play a club before they got signed, and they were stars in a really, you know, kind of dirty, real, down to earth, not fake way. I mean, they electrified the room, and it was a room that, like, you know, I think the fire capacity of that club was 120 people, and there were at least 200 in there with, you know, 40 turned away outside. And I've only seen two performances that were as good or better. And one was Johnny Cash, about 5 years before he died at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. And the other one, this is pretty special, was Screamin' Jay Hawkins at the I-Beam in San Francisco, man. That guy put on a show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you're saying is that Nirvana didn't really, their kind of form didn't really change that much when they became famous.
No.
They pretty much stayed the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Although they, the producer that they used, Butch Vig, that they used on their big major label record, which was not their first record. Right. He brought some magic to the table, but what a good record producer does is not, you know, like pulling the puppet strings. It's really kind of just polishing the diamond. But that guy is still Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters' go-to guy. If you watch that amazing series, Lost Highways, that he's producing, that's playing, you know, this month on HBO, I think it's HBO, where he goes to a different studio or a different city each week, you know, a music city like New Orleans, New York, DC, and kind of gives a bit of history on the music of the city, and then writes a song about the city and records it with his band in a recording studio in the city that has recorded a lot of the great music of that scene. And he's bringing Butch Vig with him to every studio. It's kind of funny because he's going into these stellar famous studios with these, you know, producers that are associated with the studios, and the producers are sitting in the back of the room while Dave Grohl does the producing and engineering. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So that's called Lost Highway. And you said it's on HBO.
It's Lost Highways and it's on HBO.
Lost Highways.
He's a guy who has a bit of charisma, but he's really just oozing with talent. And another thing that really, I think, enables good people to kind of make it in their chosen field. And he's a really good example of someone that has made it in their chosen field, is, you know, if they're not doing it through evil, like politicians do, or some religious leaders or some libertarians, you know, if they're walking their talk and they're decent people, a lot of what they have other than talent and some charisma is just people really like them because they're decent people. And I've heard that about Dave Grohl. I know people that have worked with him and they can't say enough good about him, you know, and I know a lot of, I know engineers and producers that have worked in studios with bands that are well known, and they have horror stories about them. Like, the guy who engineered my band Bomb's record, Hate Fed Love, the one that was on Warner Brothers, the producer of that was Bill Laswell. And he recorded Motorhead, and he said that Lemmy from Motorhead was just horrible to be around. And at one point, like, threw his bass at the control room window between Bill and the band and tried to break it.
Wow. Like, he was so, you know, oh my gosh.
Yeah. But, and, you know, yeah, another band who I've heard only good things about is that band Rancid. And I wouldn't say I know any of those guys really well, but the singer, Tim Armstrong, I'd been around him and talked with him before in San Francisco, and he was a fan of my band Bomb. And my band Slish recorded with an engineer who had this guy named Michael, I can't remember his last name, but he was the engineer or producer on the Rancid album Out Come the Wolves. And he said he has never seen a band that was so pleasant, not only to him, and they're like a gnarly, you know, kind of scary punk rock band to a lot of people, but they also have, like, if you look at their videos, they have a real, you know, kind of camaraderie feel, like, we're all together in this gang. It's us against the world. We're going to fight the good fight. You know, they do a lot of anthems with that kind of message, and you can kind of see that in their videos. But they're also really kind of charismatic in their own way, but they're also, he said, remarkably, extraordinarily nice people, not only to anybody they're working with, but to each other. And I've been around so many bands and been in so many bands where everyone just screams and scowls at each other all the time. But he said that they were like, and this is after they were big and they'd, you know, been around for 10 years or something. And he said that, like, you know, if one of them was at the store or something and they got some pizza, like, you know, they'd be like, oh, save some for him. Like, really just caring about each other like brothers, but tighter than brothers, you know? And I like that because it's nice to hear a band that kind of projects that image, but to find out that they really have it. And, like, you know, they had, that guy never gave an interview and said that. That guy, you know, like, he just told me that, and he probably told other bands that were in that week or that month the same thing. And, you know, it's really good to hear something like that about a band, because so many bands are so horrible to each other and to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, why just be nice to each other, people, you know, be excellent to each other.
I had a friend that was a sound guy at this auditorium in Chautauqua, New York, called the Chautauqua Amphitheater. And it's about a 3,000 seat amphitheater, something like that. It was like a block from where my mother's store used to be. It was only open in the summer. And I used to go there all the time. I mean, I saw a wide variety of people there, from like Chuck Mangione to Peter, Paul and Mary to, you know, I heard Bill Clinton speak there. I mean, it was that kind of place. It was like everybody.
Wow.
Peter, Paul and Mary, you know, the band that did Where Have All the Flowers Gone, you know, the hippie peacenik folky band from the '60s.
Yeah.
Mary Travers from Peter, Paul and Mary was performing there, you know, at the longer back end of her career, which is where a lot of people ended up. You know, that's where you go, Chautauqua Amphitheater. But he said that this, you know, lady who's known as like this symbol of the peace and hippie generation was screaming at her band and like using the F word like over and over and over, and like calling them talentless and screaming at them. And my friend who's the sound engineer said, like, no, man, the band were pleasant. They were fine and they were, you know, competent and they were good musicians. And she was just screaming at them.
And she was doing this in public?
No, at the sound check.
Oh, I mean, I see. Okay.
In private, but in front of, you know, 10 people who work there.
Right. People that she didn't know. Because whenever you see somebody, in my opinion, whenever you see somebody treating someone, and I see this a lot of times with kids or with parents with their children, sometimes, you know, I see a parent, like, you know, yelling at their kid in front of everyone or spanking their kid in front of everyone. I'm like, how much worse are they treating them in private?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I actually saw a lady coming out of church one time and smacking the heck out of her little kids. And I was riding by my bike and I stopped my bike and I said, Jesus loves the little children, ma'am, and rode off on my bike. And she stopped beating them, but probably beat them harder when they got to the car. And
good for you, though.
There's no reason to beat kids, man. And I'm not even Christian. Yeah. I just said it because I thought it would stop her from beating her kids. But I'm pretty much, I'm an agnostic. That's funny. Theist.
Yeah, I remember one time I was all of 5 years old and I saw how my neighbors across the street treated their children. And I actually said to them, like a 5 year old kid, I told them, I said, it looks like you treat your dogs better than you treat your kids.
A lot of people do. Not that you should treat dogs bad, but you should treat kids good, you know.
Yeah, which it was very obvious to me there was something wrong with that.
Yeah, which isn't to say you should let him run wild. And you did a good job as a mother with your kid, and you did not hit her. And she turned out really well. I won't even say, you know, usually they say she turned out okay. No, she turned out really well. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Freedom Fiends. This is the Redemption in the Third Act with myself, Michael W. Dean, and my co-host, Ms. Diana Kyler.
And
So we're gonna finish up here with tips and tricks for dealing with the double-edged sword of charisma, because both of us are pretty charismatic. I've kind of
you
retired.
Think I'm charismatic, really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Oh wow, okay, thanks.
And cool. You have that false modesty going for you too, so that really helps.
It's
yeah.
I don't want to say it's false, because then that sounds false.
I'm kind of a retired charismatic in that, you know, I used to be like somebody out in the bars and out in the clubs and out in the street, and always had a little pack of people follow me around and was always doing stuff that people wanted to get to know me because of. And I really, the past 10 years, have retired from the public eye to where, you know, I mean, I go places sometimes, but I don't really have a lot of interest in getting up on a stage and talking and, or, you know, signing books. I've done book signings at Borders Books, things like that. You know,
Borders. Oh, Borders.
It's gone. Is it gone?
I know. Yeah. I think it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was talking to someone today. I was criticizing some charismatic libertarian religious leaders. Well, they're atheists, but they are leaders of the religion of atheistic libertarianism to some people, to where like they look at them like, you know, they're the Pope or something. So I was criticizing some people like that. And somebody said, well, you just disrespected like six of these guys, you know, and who do you like? You know, are you just trying to knock them down a peg so you can take their place? I'm absolutely not trying to knock them down. I don't want their place. There are a bunch of name libertarians I have great respect for and can't say anything bad about. And I'm going to name some of them. Ian Freeman and Mark Edge from Free Talk Live. Stephen Kinsella, the attorney. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. Bill Buepert, who's one of the Freedom Fiends co-hosts. Ben Stone is one of the Freedom Fiends co-hosts. But I'm not saying that because I'm not saying I like them because they're Freedom Fiends co-hosts. I invited them to be Freedom Fiends co-hosts because I like them and have so much respect for them. Jeffrey Tucker, I don't really dig his vibe. You know, like, you know, I don't read a lot of his stuff, but I've followed him and he does good work, and he's not my kind of libertarian, but I can say nothing bad about the guy. And, and then the last
he seems humble to me too.
Yeah. And then, Boston Tea Party and Claire Wolf. And the guy replied like, I don't know who those last two are. And I'm like, well, that's kind of the point. Okay. They're both people who were literally like writing books on liberty and firearms and encryption and, you know, why government is immoral, like 15 years ago, like before this whole current crop of libertarians were even libertarians. And when a lot of them were like in, you know, middle school or high school, or definitely most of them were still voting and thinking that could change things. So they're and a lot of these are influential. Like Boston Tea Party wrote a book called You and the Police that actually created the cop block movement. I mean, I've never heard cop block say it, but everything they do is like word for word out of his book. And he said it 5 years before they started. So,
wow.
And the other thing is, like, you know, Claire Wolf and Boston Tea Party, like, also, they're, you know, the reason people don't know who they are in the current crop of face beef libertarians is because, you know, they publish actual books on paper. They sell them at gun shows. I mean, I've seen Boston at a gun show. He is treated like a rock star. But he's also really smart. He's a better writer than most of this current crop. He also is like a, kind of a man's man. Like when most of these libertarians are like, you know, yelling at people on the internet for giving a $2 donation or like, you know, begging for change and saying, I'm having trouble with my rent. Like Boston Tea Party is literally buying small aircraft and flying them, buying collections of classic rifles and like going on safari in Africa, you know? So he's doing something right. I have a lot of respect for that. So the other thing I wanted to say real quick, and this is advice I learned the hard way in a rock band, is be fair to everybody, because you meet the same people on the way up as you meet on the way down. And that is crucial information for anybody who's trying to harness their charisma and, you know, talent, whether they have a lot or little, and they're, you know, large amount of charisma and, you know, make a name for themselves. And I'm not saying be nice to everybody, because not everybody deserves you to be nice, but, you know, treat everybody fairly, because you meet the same people on the way up that you meet on the way down.
Yeah.
And that's the Freedom Fiends.
Yay.
Thanks, Diana. Have fun in Dubai.
Thank you.
Make it back safe from Dubai.
I will.
Worms.
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 Worms. Meow. Meow.